The first thing that's worth knowing about Josh Swatty is that he's a Democrat who won a seat in the state house from a district in the middle of the state in what's normally Republican turf. He was reelected several times and later served as the state's Secretary of Agriculture. Now at age 38, he wants to be the state's next governor, and Josh Swatty joins me here in the studio. Good to see you again. Welcome.
Thank you for having me on.
You know, you had these TV ads up, Josh, pointing out the different ways people say your last name. Am I getting it right? Because in theory, I'm supposed to as a radio host here.
Do you know, that's the two things about my name. One, you are getting it right. The V sounds like a W.
There's a relief. Yeah.
Two, it is butchered multiple times every day, and I don't really mind.
Yeah.
It's part of having a bohemian name. Very proud of it.
I was going to say it's bohemian.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what throws people off with the V. It should be a W.
Yes, and the beauty, if you've seen the video, the beauty of the Bohemian language is it's not consistent through all of the V's and W's that you'd find in people's last names.
So what people might see it somewhere else in the country, you're saying it's going to be a W instead of a V.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Why do you want to be governor?
So, in part because of my Bohemian background. My family's been here since the 1864 was the first time a member of my family arrived here. We care deeply about this state, and that's been passed down for generations and have been through basically every up and down that the state's had. And I served in part when I was in the legislature because of that, because of the concerns I had for the center part of the state. And then as I left state service and had been out for 8 years, I watched what happened to state government, and it was hard for me, for a person that cares about my state, cares about the state government, to watch it be dismantled and almost run into the ground. And my wife and I said, we're not going to sit back and watch this anymore. We looked at other people that were running, particularly on the Republican side, and they said, no, we're going to stop this.
So when you hear the name Sam Brownback, you think what, Josh?
I think of a governor that tried some experimental policies that simply did not work. And probably the largest indictment I would make of him is that a governor must have the capacity to change course when it's clear that you have done something that's not working. And rather than doing that, they sort of rode that horse all the way down to the detriment of our bond rating, to the detriment of our state agencies, and to the detriment of the people of Kansas.
You know, as you get around the state, do you have a sense, Josh, do Kansans understand just how big a financial hole they're in right now?
No, although I don't blame them for that. I mean, it is more complicated than almost anyone can understand, particularly because of the bonding and the indebtedness that the state has run up over the last 8 years. But I do think they're more aware than normal. The argument could be made that they were not fully clear in 2014 because, of course, the consensus revenue estimates that were so disastrous were sort of held until 2 days after the election. I think Kansans have their eyes wide open now on that. And part of that's because of what they see in K-12. But part of it is also, you know, 70 missing children in the Department of Children and Families. That has woken the state up.
You know, there are lots of needs out there. The state highway fund has been robbed of hundreds of millions of bucks. Welfare programs are hurting. The state prison system is hurting. Is there enough money coming in to get Kansas through another 4 years without a tax increase?
Probably. And I tell people the one thing to remember there is additional revenue that comes in that we did not anticipate is almost entirely spoken for the next administration because of the bonded indebtedness and the monies that or the bills that we've pushed off to the future. But I do think our economy is largely driven by agriculture and oil and gas. Agriculture is absolutely in the doldrums right now, and barring continued trade messes created by our current president of the United States, that should improve over the next few years. And then oil and gas is improving. You know, oil's back up to $70 a barrel. And I cannot stress how much of an impact that actually has on the state's budget.
I don't think people realize that.
No, and it's multiple levels. One, through the severance tax, that's money coming into the state coffers. But that's also large numbers of our counties, particularly rural counties, that's the big portion of their property valuation. Ness County, for example, had a drop of $60 million in their county valuation when oil and gas took its hit. And for a county that size, I mean, that was almost 50% of their total valuation. So it's a huge part of those county budgets.
Josh Swati, a Democratic candidate for Kansas governor, is my guest. Well, you would know about farm country and what's happening out there. You're a farmer yourself.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
It's a struggle right now. It's been a struggle for a number of years. And we were just finally seeing, you know, the wheat price is, you know, hovering around $5, but it's which is not nearly as high as it should be. But that's almost double where it was over the past couple of years. So things are getting better, but they were teetering on the balance. And it's what's been frustrating for farmers is these trade fights that we are now having thrust upon us are taking direct hits at some of Kansas agriculture's biggest exports, sorghum, which we are the number one producer in the country by far. Wheat takes a hit when all the other grains take a hit. And then beef, which is our biggest agricultural export, our biggest agricultural portion of the state. It's a big deal.
What kind of farming do you do out in Ellsworth?
Yes. So I have primarily a wheat and sorghum dryland farm operation and then a cow-calf operation.
And are you able to spend much time out there these days? Because you're obviously got something else going on.
No, I've got my brother that's helping me on this campaign, which I'm very happy he's doing that because it's, you know, in a campaign, particularly right now, it's all in. I was able to be back for a little bit of wheat harvest, which was just good for my soul, but not there every day right now for sure. But it's been dry, and farmers are concerned, understandably. I mean, all of us are working with older equipment that we need to because you sort of push off those purchases, waiting for those good years, and it's just been a long time in between good years and the ag economy.
Do you get out in the fields and drive, or what do you do?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, right now we just finished up wheat harvest. I'm making the decision whether or not to double crop a little bit on my fields. And then I'm checking my cow-calf herd, which is largely, you know, stable out on the grass right now. But I've gotten lucky and caught a few rains, so my grass is okay. I don't have to manage it too much. But there are farmers that are making day-to-day decisions. You know, do they pull cattle off grass right now, which is too early? But their grass is almost played out. And I have a few pastures like that, but my main grass is actually in pretty good shape.
You still enjoy it, it sounds like.
Oh, it's as my wife or my political driver who drives me around on the campaign trail kind of test, my mind is rarely far from there. And it's actually, we were laughing. I was on the phone with my co-op 30 minutes ago selling some of my wheat crop because it's up right now. And it's also the end of the month. All farmers know this. I got to pay my co-op bill. So yeah. You're taking care of business.
Well, one of the biggest issues, you know, maybe the biggest, Josh, is the funding of schools. Did the state Supreme Court rule correctly this week when it said that the $525 million that lawmakers added to school funding over 5 years wasn't enough? Does that make sense to you?
You know, I'm not going to say whether it was a correct decision or not. I do think that decision didn't surprise me, basically giving the process another year to work, because it does allow a new administration to take a crack at this. And I think it was basically the court trying to say that they appreciated the financial situation the state's in, that $525 million or whatever it was is not as much as K through 12 has been underfunded. But that's probably as good as the legislature can do right now, given the needs in every other state agency.
Yeah. Kansas has been known for years as a state that prided itself on its public schools. Have we lost that reputation?
Yes, I think that reputation, in conjunction with the entire state's reputation, one of the reasons we're in this race is that it's not just schools. Kansas has famously been known as a very reasonable, sensible, middle-of-the-road place with good government. We take care of our young people. We take care of our seniors. Yeah. We take care of our roads. And I think the perception of us as a state, both within and then critically outside of the state of Kansas, has dropped in the last 8 years.
So what's your sense? Why did we go off on this conservative jag the last number of years with Governor Brownback? What happened out there?
You know, if you look at this is maybe too in the weeds, but if you look at when we passed the really critical legislation that started sending messages about the direction of the state, it was in a window of time just shortly after the 2012 election cycle when the remaining Republican moderates were flushed out of the Kansas Senate, opening the doors to basically super majorities of conservatives in all the House, the Senate, and the governor's office. And that's when you saw the tax package pass. That's when you saw the property tax lid, which is hampering local counties. That's when you saw due process for teachers, which was ironclad for decades. The legislature wouldn't touch it. And it disappeared literally overnight with very little conversation. Those passed rapidly. And I think that's during that window, it was when the rest of the country started saying, whoa, this is a different state than it's been for a long time.
You know, you won this seat in the state house at age 22. You know, a lot of 22-year-olds aren't thinking about tax policy. They're not thinking about social services at that point in their lives. But you were. How come?
I think it was something that was a part of my family growing up. We, you know, we're a big Bohemian family that was sort of the Democratic outpost in that part of the state. There were other Democrats in Ellsworth County for sure, but the Swatties sort of we were known as the county Democrats, and so we talked about politics a lot. My dad had been on the school board for 14 years, and I kind of joked the first year I ran, I really sort of ran on my dad's school board talking points because that's what I knew as a kid growing up. And learned the rest of it when I was in the legislature. And I was amazed. In some respects, I had never worked anywhere other than the farm, so it's not like I had some professional career. But when I got into the legislature, I discovered no one that wins a seat in the legislature is really fully prepared for it. So even the people that have been county commissioners for 30 years, we were all learning on the same plane. And
What surprised you about it when you first got there at the age of 22?
I think that what surprised me was the amount of work that does actually go on in the committees. And to me, they were sort of like extensions of class. You move from committee to committee and you're learning about these processes and all the committee members are learning about them. And so I had not fully anticipated that experience. The other thing that surprised me was how much we worked intergenerationally. One of my closest friends in that freshman class was Roger Reitz. He went on to be a state senator from Manhattan. But Roger and I were laughing. There was a brief window of time when Roger was three times my age. I was 24 and he was 72. We were very kindred spirits.
You know, your stand on abortion might have been another reason why you did as well out there. You are anti-abortion rights on that issue, which puts you at odds with many members of your party. How did you square that with them?
So I voted that way, which was a commitment that I made to that district when I got into the legislature. And that is, you know, usually every year there's a piece of legislation on that. Or during my tenure, which was 7 years, it was basically two pieces of legislation. One, a bill that would have had more, it was basically called clinic licensure, sort of regulations for abortion clinics. And then the second, they called it the Unborn Victims of Violence Act. But this is really the question of the woman killed by the drunk driver and she was 9 months pregnant. Is it a single homicide or can the person be tried for a double homicide? So those were the two big legislative issues that we faced when I was there. But I think part of that, when I served in the legislature, we had a Democratic caucus that represented all or part of almost half the state in terms of counties. And so there were a number of us that voted that way because we represented very conservative districts and we're appreciative of that. That has since dwindled considerably. The Democratic caucus now represents all or part of only 14 counties. There's only one multi-county legislator in the Democratic caucus. It's Adam Lusker from Frontenac, and he represents portions of other counties in southeast Kansas. And I think that it's healthy for the Democratic Party to understand that they need voices statewide. It's impossible to be a party that governs statewide if you have no voices contributing to your caucus that are anywhere but from the most urban parts of the state.
Yeah. You know, this issue, as you well know, is now front and center with the news this week that Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy is retiring. If you move ahead a step or two here in what's likely to happen, you know, it's not hard to imagine the overturning of Roe versus Wade now, and as the result of President Trump's nominating a more conservative justice to take Anthony Kennedy's place. But then if Roe is overturned, the issue of abortion could well wind up back in the states, meaning that each state would decide the issue, Josh. Where would a Governor Josh Swatty take the state in a situation like that?
Sure. Well, I've said, and this was actually prior to the Kennedy resignation, but as a governor, I would veto any new restrictions on women's reproductive rights. We have real challenges for women's access to health care in rural areas. And that runs the gamut of vaccinations, screenings, access to contraceptives, sex education. And they need to be able to access those services. And some of it is geographic proximity, but it's a broad set of issues.
So even though you're anti-abortion, you're drawing a line right now.
Well, yes. And I've said that for a number of months, that I'd veto any new restrictions. I also think, though, that as governor, you balance a broader constituency. And, you know, I talked with someone else about this yesterday. I think that there have been people that have used this issue as a political football aggressively for decades. And most Kansans, frankly, when you talk with them, are generally in the same boat. They feel like they are divided, but most Kansans are together on this. They don't want to criminalize women. They don't want women seeking back alley abortions. So most Kansans actually are much closer on this than they realize. But this issue has been used and frankly abused for years, largely through unconstitutional legislation. And I think that moving forward, the state could use a governor that appreciates both sides of this and is willing to listen to both sides, but also understands at the end of the day, women need access to health care across the state. And they need a governor that can appreciate that and fight for it, but do it in a way that brings people together, because the state also has many other huge challenges to address. And if we get bogged down in what is likely to be a very large national fight, then we're not hitting on the other issues that the state has to fix.
Josh Swatty, the Democratic candidate for Kansas governor, is my guest. The Department of speaking of one of those large issues, the Department of Children and Families has faced all sorts of criticism for a lack of transparency, for foster kids being forced to spend the night in state offices because of the lack of foster care homes around the state. Given that, how satisfied are you with the relatively new leader of the Department of Children and Families, Gina Meyer-Hummel? Has the department turned the page here?
She is an improvement, but there is much that needs to be done. And as I tell people, having run a state agency, I have a huge amount of respect for the dedicated civil servants that make that agency work. And it's not simply plugging warm bodies in to do paperwork, particularly in the Department of Children and Families. This is social work. These need to be trained individuals that look at families and tease out the very hard to understand social structure and what might be best for children. And, you know, we've all read the reports. We know what's going on within that agency. It's understaffed. I think many of the staff that are there now that have come in the past recent years are perhaps not as well trained as the individuals that left in the exodus during this administration. It's hard to attract quality staff when it's clear that the administration does not respect civil servants. And so rebuilding state government is going to mean not only choosing the right administrative head, which is critical,
right,
but it's also about creating an environment where qualified individuals are willing to move back into civil service away from the private sector, where they usually make more money, and dedicate their lives to making it better. And that's going to require an administration and a governor that can engender that kind of enthusiasm and also security.
Let's turn to guns, Josh. Are you an NRA guy or a gun control guy?
So, you know, when I was in the House, I voted for conceal and carry, but we did that requiring 8 hours of training, and the you had to get a permit from the state, which I thought were very reasonable restrictions. And frankly, they were supported by the gun industry. And it was sad for me after I left in 2009 to watch those be rolled back almost wholesale, again, back to that window of time after 2012 when so much happened. And that's probably a big distinction between myself and my principal opponent in the Democratic primary.
Laura Kelly.
Laura Kelly was a co-signer of the constitutional carry legislation that removed any requirements for people that were going to conceal and carry. So you no longer had to be trained. You no longer had to get a permit from the state. And I can remember those of us outside of the process when this was going on saying, why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. We have a very reasonable conceal and carry law on the books right now. No one was complaining that it was overly burdensome. The people that wanted to carry would go through the process. Is 8 hours of training enough? I mean, you could argue whether it was perfect, but at least it was an important first step to someone making the decisions as to whether or not what they wanted to do this. And she was right there and helped ensure its passage through the Senate, making it happen in that 2012 window.
You know, for voters out there who are trying to sort you folks out as they weigh this decision for the Democratic nomination, you know, what distinguishes you from Carl Brewer, from Laura Kelly? What should people be thinking about, Josh? Because people, I think, have a lot of choices out there, and it's confusing.
They do have a lot of choices, and I appreciate you asking the question, because any of us, particularly Senator Kelly and I, who served in the legislature, we're going to have a voting record. And anybody can always pick apart at a voting record and say, well, they did this wrong and did that wrong. And frankly, both of us have areas where within the Democratic Party platform, people say, well, that vote doesn't line up with where we think it ought to be. I mean, Senator Kelly voted for Chris Kobach's voter suppression law. What I try to get people to understand, two things. Justice Kennedy is a prime example. Elections matter. I mean, you have to win the election or else you're not making the decision on Justice Kennedy and you end up in the situation you're in. And my principal argument would be that Senator Kelly, Mayor Brewer, simply cannot win a statewide race.
Why can't Laura Kelly or Carol Brewer win?
If you look at Democratic performance in the last few years and use the 2014 example, Paul Davis ran a good campaign, raised a lot of money, was running against the least popular governor in the country. He won seven counties in the state, seven, the furthest west being Riley. So, you know, the entire western half of the state is only 9% of the population, but Democrats have been losing it 80-20 or 75-25, or in the last presidential election cycle, we had counties that gave 6% of their vote to Hillary Clinton. If a Democrat's going to win statewide, they're never going to win every county in Western Kansas, but you've got to win 10 or 12, and you've got to at least compete in the others.
Right. And you can do that and they can't?
I can do that and they can't. And that's in part because of the way the electorate has shifted. People vote on identity now more than issues. So all the great white papers in the world talking about what they'll do for rural development cannot solve the problem that Laura Kelly grew up in New York and, you know, has only been here for the last 30 years and lives in Topeka firmly and has no family contacts buried deep in these communities. Whereas I go to anywhere in rural Kansas. I was down in Fredonia for a forum this week, and I've got Swatties that have been there for 40 years, and Howard was the beloved art teacher there, and everyone had Howard. And so those connections, that third-party validation, give me rural electoral success in a way that Mayor Brewer and Laura Kelly just don't have.
You know, you haven't been able to convince former Governor Sebelius to come over to your side. She's been in Laura Kelly's camp. Why couldn't you win her over?
You know, they were next door neighbors. And I think that there was I think that there is definitely within the Democratic Party, same as the Republican Party, a cadre of people that feel as though they sort of control the party and get to call all of the shots. And we have been running against them from day one because I'm not from that. I'm not part of the cadre that's located in Topeka and Lawrence largely. We are from different voices, and we try to feature that. I mean, you look at who we chose as our running mates. I found a West Point graduate that flew Black Hawk helicopters in Iraq and is on the school board in Manhattan, and she's dynamic and incredible and huge leadership experience and qualities. And those are the people that you don't find when you are locked up at the upper echelons of the party establishment. I mean, Senator Kelly chose her Senate seatmate as her lieutenant governor. Well, guess what? In order to fix the state, you're going to have to draw on talent from across the state. You don't meet that talent if you're running everything from a smoke-filled room at the top of the party. You find that talent when you're busting it up and down Kansas highways, which is what we've been doing for the last 13 and a half months.
That's Josh Swati. He's a Democratic candidate for Kansas governor. The primary is on August 7th. Thanks for coming in. Always good to see you. Travel safe out there.
Thanks.